You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome back to the Fenway Rundown, Mass Live's Red Sox podcast. Chris Cotillo, your host, Sean McAdam, will be joining us in a second. We're going to go within the front office today. Brian O'Halloran, Red Sox general manager since 2019, been with the organization for more than 20 years, and he's going to get his thoughts on this year's team. It's one thing to hear from Sean and myself every week, what we think about the team, but you know, we'll hear from one of the architects of it today, touch on what they might do at the trade deadline, his early impressions, surprises, and really get into his career path as well. So appreciate, you know, Brian's time. I think he's a guy that everybody knows of, obviously, big job being the general manager of the Red Sox, the number two to Chaim Bloom, but not a guy that you kind of hear from in this setting very often. So very interesting guy with some very interesting thoughts here in this week's rundown. So we have, alongside with Sean McAdam, we have Red Sox general manager Brian O'Halloran on the show today. Brian, we appreciate the time. Hope you were able to unwind a little bit on Memorial Day and off day after a long West Coast trip, which you were not on, but watching from afar. And obviously the body clock gets a little screwed up with the West Coast times and things like that. I want to start with this, which I think is, you know, a good way to get into it, kind of a broader question. But, you know, as Sean wrote yesterday, and as people always talk about, Memorial Day is kind of a time where you really assess what you have in a ball club. I think, you know, it's a time-honored tradition in baseball that is when you kind of take stock of what you have. How would you assess, you know, where the Red Sox are right now compared to maybe where you thought you guys would be?
Yeah, well, first of all, thanks for having me on. Good to be with you guys. I mean, it's what I would say is you know, I think we have a good team. I think there's a good group of players. There's a lot of talent, and it's a good group of guys that Alex has really, you know, pulling on the same end of the rope, so to speak. We've had our ups and downs. You know, we're a few games over 500. We want to be better than that. If the season ended today, we would not be in the playoffs. So that's, you know, results wise, we're not where we want to be. But I think the team has shown its capabilities. It's shown a lot of fight, in terms of, like, you know, especially offensively, when we get down in game, when we've gotten down in games, we've battled back. For most of the season thus far, we've had really good, you know, really good at bats, good approach. You know, the starting pitching, you know, was inconsistent, for a while. But you know, there's plenty of talent in that rotation. Obviously we've made some changes and have, you know, a group right now that we think can help stabilize that part of it. And if they can keep us in games and give us good, you know, consistent starting pitching, we feel pretty good about our chances because we like our offense and our bullpen has done a solid job as well.
Yeah, Brian, on the offense, I was going to ask whether that has been something of a pleasant surprise, given that, you know, you lost some significant bats in the offseason, added a few as well. Alex Cora spoke in spring training about, you know, wanting to put the ball in play more, keep the line moving, that it wasn't going to be a traditional, you know, home run centric lineup necessarily. And indeed, you guys are kind of in the middle of the pack home run wise, but you're a top five or six in runs and OPS. Has the offense, as you look at it a third of the way through, exceeded expectations?
Honestly, I don't think so. For me, I think it's performed, you know, roughly as expected. As what Alex said in spring training, you know, is also how I see it. You know, we wanted to put the ball in play more, but most importantly, we want to have good at bats. We need to get on base. That this isn't, you know, rocket science. Good offenses, the players get on base and you do damage. You have good at bats, make solid swing decisions, and just grind at bats and keep the line moving, get on base as much as possible. You're going to score runs. And I think, you know, for the most part, we've done that. And even, yes, we did lose some key contributors offensively. We all know that, but we also, like you said, we added some good players. Yoshida's done a really nice job. You know, some of the other guys, Turner, certainly Cassis in his role, although, you know, he finally got, I guess, to the Mendoza line here, but in terms of his overall approach, even when struggling a little bit, on the batting average side with, you know, maybe a little bit more, you know, swing and miss, you know, than he wants to, he has contributed. Even the guys that at times are struggling are contributing by having good at bats, by getting on base. And Tristan, I think, also has really, you know, started to turn it around, and he's going to be a good player.
Ryan, what surprised you the most about this team 2 months in?
Well, I'm going to answer it sort of, I don't know if this is the right way to do it or what you were thinking, but I'm going to answer it in the negative. Honestly, the inconsistency of the starting pitching, you know, has surprised me because although it has stabilized, begun to stabilize lately, and I think it will be good going forward. I just think the group is better than they have performed, and that they performed especially in like the first month to 6 weeks. Beyond that, I don't think there are huge surprises here. I mean, Duvall's first 8 days were you know, a pleasant surprise, and obviously, unfortunately, the injury, but he'll be back soon, and anything can happen, obviously, in short samples. Mm-hmm. But not a surprise, but just good to see Yoshida adjusting to the big leagues the way he has, and sort of performing as we hoped and projected. But you know, there's always some unknown when you're coming from a different league and never having played in Major League Baseball. And, you know, some guys have taken some steps forward. Wong has stepped forward. Duran's been great. So, you know, but I think that's just their talent coming through. And that's less of a surprise than just like, okay, you know, you wonder when it will happen just because it takes young players. Most of the time, it takes young players a while to adjust to the big leagues and have their true talent come out.
Brian, it's an old axiom in the game that you have to be strong up the middle to be a successful team. And when you look at some of the challenges the club has had through the first 2 months with injuries, depleting your shortstop depth, depleting you at second, forcing some changes in the outfield with Duvall going down, and even the sort of unknown about the catchers and the position in general going into the season. How pleased are you that you've been able to overcome some of those injuries? And what does it say about the depth that you've built that you've been able to do that?
Yeah, definitely pleased. I mean, like, you know, with Duvall going down, it's been incredible what Duran has done. And even, you know, he's had, you know, a little bit of struggles lately, but overall has done a terrific job. And it's just great to see him playing like he can and having his athleticism show through just seeing what he has shown in the minor leagues show up in the big leagues now. And again, sometimes that takes a while, you know, for players to adjust and find their footing. And it's been great to see him there doing that. So that's been a plus. I think the depth has been tested. Every team has injuries, you know, you have to be built to withstand that. I think we've improved the depth over time. It's, you know, it's never perfect. I think for the most part, we've passed that test, but we got to keep improving.
We'll get into, you know, obviously your career, which I think, you know, you are the foremost expert on, obviously. You look back at, you know, being in the Red Sox, you're being with the Red Sox since 2002, right? That was your first year.
Yes. Middle of 2002. Yeah.
What is the biggest change that's come with working in a front office in that 20-year span? Is it just the access to numbers, analytics, data, all that type of stuff? Is it how big, you know, the front offices are now and how big the staffs are? How would you assess, you know, that the biggest change that you've seen?
Yeah, I think you hit on probably the two biggest things. It is a much bigger operation now than when I started. There's, you know, there's a lot more data and information that you have to put together to make your decisions. In the end, it's still baseball, and you still have to make good decisions, and sort of the underlying principles are still the same. But it's also a game that's changing rapidly. You always have to be learning and staying on the cutting edge with your practices, with your with your player development, with your scouting practices, et cetera. And of course your analytics and how you put the information together. So that's all changed. Like you said, and I'm reiterating that the staffs are just much bigger. I think we had maybe 10 to 12 people in the office on the baseball operations side when I started. And now we have, 75 or something like that. And that's not just the Red Sox. That's every team. Analytics staffs have grown. I mean, there was no analytics department when I started, even though we were, perceived to be, and I think generally were, near the front in terms of use of information and objective information. It still was, what that looked like was you had a GM and some people around him that, just thought more analytically and things like that, and tried to use the information that was out there at the time. But it was very limited. And then teams started growing, actual departments and there's just a lot of different things that baseball organizations do now that they did not do in 2002 when I started.
Brian, in your position as general manager of the team, I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about sitting down with Chaim Bloom when he was brought in to be chief baseball officer, how you two fit and what that process was like as he was named to that position and then elevated you to GM.
Yeah, so I knew Chaim before. We've been in the game, for pretty similar amount of time. I've been in a little bit longer, but we've known each other over the years. Didn't deal with each other too much because within the division you don't do a whole lot of trades, or you're always sort of skeptical of any interactions you have with people. But I liked Chaim. I knew him and had a lot of respect for him and for what they had accomplished in Tampa over the years, as a division rival. So I knew him coming in, and so I was, I met with him actually during the interview process. We hung out a little bit, spent some time together, got to know each other better. I was thrilled that he was coming in and just because of what I said, he's someone I respected, someone, even though I didn't know super well, the people that I did know that knew him well spoke very, very highly of him as a person. Obviously what they had accomplished speaks for itself. And the more I got to know him, the more, I think we both realized that we, saw kind of the task here the same way. Philosophically we're aligned. And most importantly, got along well. That was great to see. And I was excited to work with him.
Obviously, in his chair, he's the guy who gets, criticized and, people talk about hot seat with him and those types of things. Obviously, Johnny Miller, who never holds back, asked the first question in spring training and put it that way this year. Now that you're in, I guess, season four, what do you think the biggest misperception publicly about Chaim and the way he does business is?
I try not to pay too much attention to the narratives that are out there, but I think I
except have on Mass Live, of course.
I think I have a general understanding of some of those narratives. I think to the extent that people think that it's all, numbers on a spreadsheet and it's a computer, algorithm or system that spits out what to do. Mm-hmm. That is definitely a misperception. I mean, Chaim's been in the game a long time, values scouting, traditional coaching, but also, of course, values all the information and wants to make, use all the tools at our disposal to make good decisions. And so, and then I also just think the human element, I think Haim's very comfortable, and spent a lot of time in clubhouses, interacts really well with players and coaches and managers and, you know, really everyone that all the different, folks that you have to interact with and work with in these type of jobs. And he's just he's a well-rounded guy. And I think he probably doesn't get, painted, quite as well-rounded as he is in reality.
Brian, you have a unique perspective among people in baseball ops. I'm not sure of the 75 or so, how many others are New England natives? I'm guessing that there are some, but as someone who grew up in the South Shore and rooted for this team, what element of your fandom growing up impacts, if any, how you approach the job? Do you find yourself sometimes reverting back to that fan perspective? Do you identify with the frustration that fans feel? How does that change how you act in a job where obviously you're not a fan, you're impacting, and your moves have consequences?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think, the main thing is, I know how important this team is to this region, to the city and this region. I just, I think we all do, but I take the responsibility really, really seriously and just want to do everything I can to help the Red Sox win, right? And I don't think that's unique, but I do think, growing up here, being a fan of the team, being from here, being invested in the organization even before working for the organization, it does give a little bit of a different perspective and you kind of, you do, identify with how people feel and you understand the frustrations. That said, what I can't do, obviously, and none of us can do is get caught up in it. And I think it's, really, really important to kind of ignore the noise and, just sort of focus on the job at hand, which is to make good decisions. For the team, whether it's going to upset someone or not, the media, the fans, so I think that the second you start working for a team, you really do check most of the fandom at the door. I was actually surprised at how quickly that went away. It really is sort of immediate, but it doesn't take away the experiences that you have. And certainly I still do. I am still a fan and, when I go to Fenway Park, I still feel the energy I understand how and why people feel the way they do about the team. And I want to take that very seriously. The way I want to take it seriously is by making decisions, even that might upset people, that I think, and we think, will be in the best interest of the Red Sox for the long term.
I think people, including us, probably don't have, 100% understanding of the breakdown on when you guys are making a move or when a decision is made, like who's actually, making the calls. Is it sometimes I'm sure that it's a BOH move, and sometimes, it's a little bit more of a Haim move in the day-to-day or working things out. And then you guys, obviously collaborate, or are there times where, a move is made that is more one of you guys or someone else in the department stepping up, or is it really, collaborative on every single thing you do?
I would say it's collaborative on everything we do. Like there are zero decisions that are like, oh, I'm surprised Haim did that, or vice versa. Right. Doesn't happen like that. Like, and it's obviously not just the two of us by any means. We have a great, team around us and really the whole organization, 200 something baseball operations employees are behind us and supporting us and helping us get to those decisions. Mm-hmm. It's very collaborative. We have to communicate a lot with each other, really constantly. As we look at opportunities, we discuss them. To some degree, it's not, it's not even really about what any one of us individually thinks. It's about, you know, a move or what to pursue. It's kind of, you know, getting all the information, putting it all together, getting everybody's thoughts on it, collaborating to figure out the best path. There are plenty of decisions that we've made that, you know, maybe I started out unsure of and then, but then got convinced over time, or I think Haim would say the same thing. And really any of our senior folks that are involved in these decisions. So it's a very collaborative process.
The focus is principally on the major league team and its performance on the field through the first couple of months. But Brian, how would you assess where the farm system is at this point? Maybe where it's come over the last nearly 4 years since Haim came aboard, and how you're feeling about your player development system in 2023?
Yeah, I think it's steadily improved during that time. You know, ultimately, as we've said, you know, numerous times, we want to have, you know, a top farm system, not for the sake of having a top farm system, but for to have the pipeline of players coming through and up to the big leagues, so that we can, you know, year after year, add players from the system that can help us win and sustain success. That's no matter what your payroll is, and we have a high payroll, but no matter what your payroll is, no matter what your market is, the only way you're going to be able to win consistently, compete for championships every year is to have that strong pipeline. I think we've, you know, it's improved. I think we're seeing some of the fruits of that in the big leagues this year. There's more to come. It's never a task that is, you know, completed, mission accomplished. You won't see us putting that sign up ever. But I think we're improving, and I do feel good about our system and about our player development operation.
Last one for me. It's May 30th, so it's probably a little too early for this, but I think the deadline questions are starting around the game, so we'll start it, you know, with you now. With 2 months before the deadline, obviously things will change and injuries, I'm sure, will happen, and, you know, other guys will step up and needs will arise. But when you look at your roster, where's the biggest need in terms of, you know, trying to go out and fortify at the deadline for a team that, you know, you anticipate to still be contending 2 months from now?
I mean, I don't mean to give you a non-answer, but I think it's to be determined. I mean, I think, you know, we can improve in every facet, but we also have to see how things play out with returns from injury, and how the pitching performs going forward, because obviously that's been, you know, of the, you know, between offense and run prevention has been our bigger issue. But as we talked about earlier, I do think that with the starting pitching stabilizing, you know, we should be improved there, but we have to see that happen and evaluate as we go along and see how the you know, returns from injury work out, and the progress of, you know, certainly someone like Trevor Story, you know, what his timetable looks like. So it's TBD, but you know, sitting here right now, I can tell you we could certainly improve in every facet. So we'll be looking for any way to improve the team.
I feel like you're, you know, you mentioned Trevor, but, you know, with him, Duvall, some of these other guys coming back, does it feel like, you know, whenever that is, at some point over the summer, that you're, you know, kind of getting trade acquisitions without giving anything up, just based on the guys you have out?
Yes and no. It is, of course, like getting those guys back will be a huge lift. But I don't like to think of it as, you know, players coming back from injury, that's enough. Like, we know we're going to be, you know, we're going to have other needs. We're going to need to improve if we want to win a championship, which we do. And so hopefully we can, you know, really continue to battle, put ourselves in a good spot as we head towards the deadline so that we feel really good about our chances and can keep adding to the team and improving it.
Brian, you hinted at how maybe the job has changed in your 21 or so years in baseball ops. I would imagine that one of them, a significant one, is the movement of the first year player draft, which used to be in, you know, the first 10 days of June, and now is at the All-Star break, or at the start of the All-Star break. Given that that and the trade deadline are now separated by 2.5 weeks, what are the next 2 months like in a baseball ops department, juggling both of those approaching things, the draft and the deadline?
Yeah, that is a significant change, and it really makes July incredibly hectic. So yeah, I mean, it, as we get closer to the draft, we'll be having workouts, attending workouts, seeing players, continuing to put together our analysis of the draft class, led by our scouting director, Debbie Pearson. We'll in terms of like senior front office folks, we'll be getting more and more involved in that process as we get closer to the draft. Usually we have the week leading up to the draft, we have meetings with our cross checkers and others coming in and discussing the board and getting our strategy straightened out and getting ready to go. But then the draft is 3 days, right? And as soon as that's over, again, not that you are solely focused on one thing, but as soon as that's over, it really flips to trade deadline season. But even leading up to that, there's going to be trades. There's going to be stuff going on. Even now, we're having conversations with teams. This is already that around now is when teams start checking in with each other. Like, okay, we're 2 months in. What are you seeing your needs as? What are the possible paths you think you could take heading towards a deadline, talking through just to get a sense of things and maybe even doing small trades or sometimes even bigger trades happen in June, but so there will be activity, but it will, once the draft is over, it will be, a sprint to the deadline. And it's just a very hectic time. It's a fun time though. It's a lot of adrenaline and that's some of the funnest stuff that we do in our jobs is be involved in the draft and the trade deadline.
John's only asking the draft question because if you guys do pick Thomas White, then all the work that he did on a long, long, long feature going to Worcester will not be for naught. So that's why he's asking that.
Good to know.
Well, Brian, we appreciate the time. Know you're busy and appreciate you taking some time for the Fenway Rundown today.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.